You're listening to part one of four of this special internet broadcast of the Mutual Fund Show. To listen to parts two through four, or to access other recent broadcasts, please go to the Recent Shows archive on the Mutual Fund Show website. If you have questions about any of the things that I talk about on the show, or maybe you'd like to meet with one of my great investment advisors, you can do that two ways. First, you can send us an email right from this website, or you can call your local mutual fund store branch. The phone numbers are listed in the on-air schedule section on the Mutual Fund Show website, or under locations on mutualfundstore.com.
And welcome. You're listening to the Mutual Fund Show, March 24th, 2007, coming to you on the Mutual Fund Show Satellite Network. I'm Adam Bold, founder and chief investment officer of the Mutual Fund Store, and I'll be your host for the next hour. I want to welcome you to America's only show devoted exclusively to mutual fund investments. Of course, the show isn't about what's on my mind, it's about what's on yours. I'll be taking your calls toll-free at 888-83-FUNDS. That's 888-83-FUNDS. You can call with questions having anything to do with mutual funds, annuities, your 401k, or IRAs. You can even call if you want my opinion about a fund that you already own, or maybe one you're thinking about buying. If you pay any attention to the markets, you've heard talk about the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ. Have you ever wondered exactly what those indices are? Well, on today's show, I'll tell you. Remember, before buying or selling any of the funds discussed on our show today, do your homework or work with a trained advisor to make sure the investment meets your individual circumstances and financial objectives. Also, keep in mind that the performance numbers we discuss today would not necessarily be the performance achieved by a mutual fund store investor, and the mutual funds, like other investments, have a risk of loss. You can and should visit www.mutualfundstore.com for more information. The best performing mutual fund in the country this week was the Direxion Latin America Bull Fund, which gained 14.2% on the week, while the worst performing fund in the country this week was the Direxion Emerging Markets Bear Fund, which lost 11.5%. The best performing fund for the year to date is the Guinness Atkins Alternative Energy Fund. It's up 13.9% so far, while the worst performing fund so far in 2007 is the ProFunds Ultra Short Midcap Fund, which has lost 10.8% thus far. First up is Joy in Michigan. Joy, thanks for calling. You're on the Mutual Fund Show.
Well, thank you. Good morning. My assets are all covered. And okay. I would be interested in a hybrid.
You mean like a balanced fund, a combination of stocks?
Well, not necessarily balanced. I want that it can go anywhere that the manager thinks is the future. What's going to be the next one?
Okay. There are a couple of funds. There's a number of funds. And do you want a fund that has the ability to go short as well as long? Do you know what that means?
Sort of.
Okay, let me explain to you what that means. Is there are some funds where a manager can buy any capitalization stock he wants, a small cap stock, a large cap stock, an international stock, domestic, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are also funds where a manager can do that, but he also has the ability, if he thinks that certain stocks are going to go down in value, to actually short those stocks, which means that he will profit if the stocks decline. So instead of what you normally do, which is you buy a stock and you hope it goes up in value, and that when you're shorting a stock, you're selling the stock and hoping that it will go down in value.
Mm-hmm. Now, are those called hybrids?
Well, hybrid, you know, it depends. Different companies have different labels mm-hmm. for various funds. So if you look, for example, there are some funds that Morningstar you will call a hybrid fund, and then there will be a fund in Lipper, which is and Morningstar kind of caters to the retail investor, whereas Lipper does the same sort of thing that Morningstar does, but they cater to more to professionals.
Mm-hmm.
They'll call it something completely different. So each fund has its own sort of style. One of the funds that you might want to consider is from the Icon family of funds, and the fund is called the Icon Long Short Fund, and the symbol is I as in India, O Oscar, L Larry, I India, X X-ray, IOLIX. And this is a fund, it's run by a guy named J.D. Waller, and it's a fund where he has the ability to go when he thinks the market's going up to buy stocks that he thinks are going to go up, when he thinks the market's going to go down, he has the ability to actually short the stocks. So far this year, the fund's up 3.7%. That's about 1.5% better than the overall stock market. Over the last 3 years, the fund has beaten the market as well. Has made about 11.5% a year. And when you look at the volatility of this fund has a beta of 0.74 versus the overall market, so it only has about 75% of market risk. So I think that that might be a good fund for that sort of thing that you're looking for.
Oh, excellent. And I was looking at online, your fund information.
Yes.
I see the T. Rowe Price is, in front of it is Ng. Has Ng bought out T. Rowe Price?
No. What happened is ING has, in some of their mutual funds, they've decided that instead of ING managing those funds, they have hired other mutual fund companies to sub-advise their funds. And so what happens is, with the ING funds, you're getting the same managers at T. Rowe Price that you would get by buying the funds directly, but you're having to pay a load to buy the fund. So I would not buy any of those ING funds. I would just buy the straight T. Rowe Price funds.
Oh, okay. That answers it. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you, Joy. I appreciate your call. Next up is Dale in Tampa, Florida. Dale, thanks for calling. How can I help you?
Hi. Just a real quick question. I have a three-year-old and
congratulations.
I have $1,000. Thank you. And I have $1,000 I want to put in a mutual fund for him until he's 18.
Okay.
And I really do not know where to invest it, but I definitely want to invest it. You can hear him in the background.
I do hear him. Hey, what I would recommend for you, Dale, is a fund called the Excelsior Value and Restructuring Fund. The symbol is U as in Uncle, M as in Mary, B Bravo, I India, X X-ray. And the thing I like about this fund, first of all, they will let you start this fund with as little as $500. And actually, they'll let you start with as little as $50 if you promise to put in $50 a month. But so you have your $1,000, you meet their $500 minimum. The thing I like about this fund is not just that it has a small minimum, that's nice, but what I really, really like about the fund is the fact that the performance has been so consistent. It's up 4.1% so far this year. It has beaten the market for the year to date, the 1 year, the 3 year, the 5 year, and the 10 year time horizons. Over the last 3 years, the fund has averaged 15.67% a year. Over the last 10 years, it's averaged 13.4% a year. And you know what 13.4% a year means is that your money will double every 5.5 years. So what that means is if you took $1,000 and put it in for your 3-year-old, at age 8.5, it's worth $2,000. At age 14, it's worth $4,000. And at age 19.5, it's $8,000.
Okay.
That's pretty darn good.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, that symbol was Uniform, Mike, Baker, Ida, Nancy, X-ray.
Now, okay, I'm going to do it the way that my military people have taught me. Uniform, Mike, Bravo, India, X-ray. UMBIX. And do you have internet access, Dale?
Yes, I do.
Okay, you can go to Excelsior, Excelsior, ExcelsiorFundsPlural.com, and you can get a prospectus, you can get all the new account forms and everything you need to open the account right there online at ExcelsiorFunds.com.
Thank you so much.
Hey, I appreciate it, and good luck with your three-year-old. I'll tell you, I've got three teenagers at home, and there's some days that I long for the days of having a three-year-old, some days not. Now let's talk with Ken in Indiana. Ken, you're on the Mutual Fund Show. How can I help you?
Hi, Adam. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have several funds that you have recommended, and I'm looking to add to some of those positions. I'm looking for an alternative.
Okay.
I just wonder what your thought process is for selecting between funds you've recommended. For example, I know you love T. Rowe Price Capital Appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard you say you like the Bruce Fund.
I do.
Balanced Golden Rainbow, Leuthold Asset Allocation. So if you're going to pick, I think all those are in the same like moderate allocation.
Yeah, those are all balanced funds that own a combination of both stocks and bonds.
Okay, so I've got something in that already. So how would you select another one?
Well, I think
you want to diversify.
I think you just pick. The bottom line is, no matter which one you pick, the other ones will probably do better.
Yeah.
Okay. That's just the way the world works, you know. But you know what I'm trying to do? I'm not trying to get the fund that's on the cover of Money Magazine, the best fund in the entire universe. Instead, what I'm trying to do are to find the funds that are going to deliver consistency of performance. I mean, the reality is, no matter what fund I pick in any category, there's always going to be something that does a little bit better. But what I do know is that if 5 years from now, whichever one of those funds you pick, if that fund was not the best fund of the five, but it was in the top 20% of all funds in the category, you're going to be really happy with the results. And so, you know, as long as we are getting above market returns, as long as we're in the top 20% of all funds in the category, I will be very happy and satisfied with the results. And so ultimately, you just have to pick one.
Okay. Between, like, Asset Luthold, it's just a new fund versus, say...
What do you have right now? Which are the ones...
I have Luthold core investment, but I don't have a large amount, and it's closed.
Yeah, I know. So they closed it even.
I like him when I hear him talk and what they write about.
Steve Luthold is a brilliant guy. In fact, you can go to my website, mutualfundshow.com. I had Steve on the show within the last 90 days or so.
I listened to it.
And there's an excerpt of that interview at mutualfundshow.com that you can listen to. I will tell you that I personally own some T. Rowe Price Capital Appreciation. I own some Luthold Asset Allocation, and I own some Luthold Core Investment.
Right.
And, I had Luthold Core Investment. Not only did I have an investment in that fund, but I was dollar cost averaging into that fund every month, and they cut me off. You know, they did a hard close. Not only can new investors not buy the fund, but people who already had it can't buy it. So, and like I said, they won't even let you do your dollar cost averaging. So, Luthold Asset Allocation is a great fund. You can't LAALX, Larry Alpha Alpha Larry X-Ray, LAALX is the symbol for that fund. And, you know, I think that's going to be a good choice as well. And if you don't have as much, if the answer is that you would have bought more core investment had the fund still been open, then buy the asset allocation fund and you'll be perfectly happy.
Okay.
All right, Ken, I very much appreciate your call. Thank you very much. All right, so... You're watching television, and they come on every night, even on the what I call the normal television channels. And I'm not talking about the CNBCs and Bloombergs of the world that us mutual fund geeks, that geek television. But if you're watching normal, they say today, Brian Williams, he's got that voice. Today the Dow was up 30 points. You hear people talking about the S&P 500, people talking about the Nasdaq. Well, what exactly are those? So let's start with the Dow. The Dow is a list, it's an index of 30 stocks that originally there were 12 stocks in 1896, now there's 30 that are in the Dow. They are chosen by the Dow Jones Company, which is actually the funds are chosen by the editors of the Wall Street Journal, which is a Dow Jones company, owned by the publicly traded company Dow Jones. And it is a price-weighted system. And what that means is that the Dow, the higher the price of the stock, the more influence that stock has on the price or on the index itself. Now, what kinds of stocks do they have in there? These are 30 of the largest companies in the country. It's 3M, Alcoa, Altria Group, which is the former Philip Morris, American Express, AIG, AT&T, Boeing, Caterpillar, Coca-Cola, DuPont, Exxon, General Electric, Hewlett-Packard, Home Depot, etc. The thing you need to know about the Dow, though, is it's just 30 stocks. It is really not that representative of what is going on in the economy as a whole. So along comes the Standard & Poor's Company, which is a division of another publicly traded company called McGraw-Hill. And the people at Standard & Poor's created an index that has 500. It's called the S&P 500. Why? Because it has 500 stocks in it. They are 500 stocks that are designed to replicate the composition of the overall economy. So if 20% of the economy comes from the healthcare sector, then 20%, or in this case 100 of the 500 stocks, will be healthcare companies. If 10% of the economy comes from the automobile industry, then 10% will be automobile-related stocks, etc. Lastly is the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ Composite Index has more than 4,000 stocks in it, and it's every single stock that is on the NASDAQ exchange. It is a technology-heavy index, and so it is much more volatile than the other indices. Now, what's the point of all these indices? Well, the point is that these indices represent a way for you to compare how your mutual fund is doing relative to other things that you could be invested in. If I tell you that your fund made 10% last year, is that good? Well, it's sort of like if I told you your basketball team scored 62 points last night. Kind of depends what the other team scored. By having these indices, you have a way to compare the performance of your funds to other things. And I'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. I'm your host, Adam Bold. We'll be right back. Let's go back to the phones and let's talk with Ruth in Kansas City. Ruth, you're on the Mutual Fund Show.
Hi, Ruth. Hi, Adam. I'm hoping you can help me out.
Sure.
My grandmother is in her mid-70s, and
okay.
She's got only about $25,000 left, about half in a taxable account, about half in a tax-deferred account,
okay.
out of what my grandfather left. And an investment firm supposedly is watching it, but it's so small, they don't pay much attention, and it really has not done very well.
Okay.
And the family's kind of asked me to help possibly pull that out, and I just, at her level of risk, I have no idea what fund picks to make that would help her grow a little and provide a little bit of income. She doesn't normally, you know, tap into it too much except with large expenses she can't pay for out of her normal income.
Right. Well, you know what you might do with in that kind of situation where you don't want to take a lot of risk but still give her an opportunity for good returns. I think what I would do is I would consider a balance fund. And my very favorite balance fund is the T. Rowe Price Capital Appreciation Fund. The symbol is P as in Paul, R. Roger, W. William, C. Charlie, X. X-ray. And this fund, year-to-date, is up 2.09%, even though it's half-and-half stocks and bonds. The fund, over the last 5 years, has averaged about 11.2% a year. Over the last 10 years, 12.04% a year. And this is a fund that has a beta of 0.7 versus the market, so it's only about 70% as volatile as the overall stock market. It's a fund that has not had a year where they actually lost money in more than 10 years. And so they've had some years like 2002, which was, if you remember, that was a year where the stock market was down 21%.
Yeah.
It was up 0.5%, so it didn't make a huge return. But I think what, you know, this is never going to be a fund that has giant returns to the upside either. But for someone like your grandma who wants the opportunity for some growth but also wants to have a moderate level of risk, then I think the T. Rowe Price Capital Appreciation Fund would be an excellent choice.
Thank you, Adam.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate your call. All right. Next up is John in Philadelphia. John, you're on the Mutual Fund Show.
Yeah, Adam. I wanted to get your opinion of the MERKX Fund.
Okay, that is the Merck Hard Currency Fund, and this is a world bond fund is the category that Morningstar puts it into. I would assume from the name that they're buying the actual currencies from around the world. And so far, the fund's done great. It had an 11.7% return last year. It's up 1.3% so far this year. What I would tell you is that, A, this fund does not have a long track record, and so when I buy a fund, I would much rather buy a fund where the manager has demonstrated over an extended period of time that he can deliver consistency of performance. This fund is run by a guy named Axel Merck. He founded Merck Investments AG in Switzerland in 1994. In 2001, he relocated to the U.S. and transferred all investments to Merck Investments LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. So he's really only been doing this strategy in the U.S. since 2001. It's not enough time. I think it's kind of a gimmicky fund, and it might. That's not to say that the fund won't do okay. I just think that when you buy a fund like this, that it's more speculation than it is investing. And what I'm trying to do for people is help them find places for their serious money, the money that has to be there when they retire, that has to be there for their kids' education, et cetera. So I would be avoiding this fund. I appreciate your call, John. Next up is Miriam in Aurora. Miriam, you're on the Mutual Fund Show.
Hi, Adam. I wanted to ask you about adding bonds to my mutual fund portfolio.
Yes, ma'am.
What percentage of the portfolio should be in bonds, and what funds you'd recommend, and in what proportion?
Well, the percentage is going to be different for each person. The question is, why are you buying bonds? And there's a couple of reasons that people buy bonds. The first reason is for income. Because with bond funds, they typically pay interest every month. And so if you are at the point in life where you have turned your instead of being in the accumulation stage, you're in the spending stage, where you're actually drawing from your investments to meet your monthly obligations, then it's nice to have some things to pay income every month. The other reason that people have bonds in their portfolio is to reduce volatility. Because, you know, when people talk about can I lose money? You know, unless the stock market goes to zero, and if it does, then we have a lot more to worry about than our mutual funds, you know, anarchy in the streets, all that kind of stuff. Unless the stock market goes to zero, really the risk is just on any given day how much above or below the line is the value of your account going to be. And so some people can't take the volatility of the stock market, and so we put bonds into their portfolio to reduce it. How old are you now, Miriam?
I'm 53.
Okay, and are you still working?
Yes.
And
yeah, I would want to, you know, reduce volatility is what I was thinking, that, you know, to be more balanced, that you should have some bonds in there.
Yeah, so what I would tell you is at 53, so you've got another 7 to 10 years, is that what we're talking about in your working career?
Oh, probably longer than that.
Okay, well, if that's the case,
I'm like 65.
Okay, well, if that's the case, then I would look at somewhere in a maybe 10% total in bonds. And the funds that I like in the bond area are, number one, the WestCorp Plus Bond Fund. The symbol is WTIBX, William Tom India Bravo X-ray. The other fund that I like is the Fidelity Floating Rate High Income Fund. The symbol is F Frank, R Roger, H Henry, X X-ray, FFRHX. Miriam, I very much appreciate your call. All right, a little bit earlier in the show, I was talking about the NASDAQ, the S&P 500, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And so the Dow is 30 stocks. The S&P 500 is 500 stocks, and the NASDAQ Composite Index is every single stock that's in the NASDAQ, so it's more than 4,000 different companies. So what should we be watching, and why do we even care about these indices? Well, the reason that we care is that these indices serve as a way for you to compare how your investments are doing relative to other things that are available to you. You know, if I tell you that your fund made 10%, is that good? Well, it's sort of like if I told you that your favorite college basketball team scored 62 points last night. Is that good? Well, it kind of depends what the other team scored. So if it's not enough to look at your funds and say, okay, my fund has made 10% a year. Instead, you need to say, okay, my fund has made 10% a year. The S&P 500 has made 5%. And so I'm doing very, very well. Or my fund made 10%, but the S&P made 15%. I'm not doing that well. And that's why when you hear me talk about these various mutual funds, I was just talking about the Marsco 21st Century Fund. And I say, okay, it's 1.5% so far this year better than the market. It's beaten the market by 9.7%. When I say the market, I'm comparing it to the S&P 500. And so what I'm saying is you could have taken your money and put it into an S&P 500 index fund, and that fund would have made 9.7% a year, less than what the Marsco 21st Century Fund did. And so that's when I'm choosing these funds, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to find those funds that beat the market on a regular basis. Now, there's no guarantees. I can't guarantee that the funds I pick are going to beat the market. What I can guarantee you, and there's very few things I can, is that I've done my homework. I've talked with the managers. What each of these funds, when you hear me recommend funds, I'm recommending a small cap fund from one company and a large cap fund, a growth fund from another and an international fund from another, etc. Each of those funds are different. They have different managers. They're from different fund companies. They have different investment philosophies. They have different ways of selecting which stocks to buy, sell, and hold. But what they all have in common, the common thread, is that there is a manager, a person or a couple of people, who every day make the buy, sell, and hold decisions and have consistently over extended periods of time beaten the markets, beaten those indexes more often than not. Now, that's no guarantee, but it certainly improves, I believe, it improves our odds for success. Because when you see a manager who has beaten the market year after year after year after year, the odds are much better than if you find a fund where the manager's just done worse in the market year after year. So that's what we want to try and do, is to find those managers that deliver the consistency and beat the indexes. Next up is Horst in Houston, Texas. Horst, you're on the Mutual Fund Show.
Could get in today, and I have one question for you.
Yes, sir.
I have some funds with CGM Realty Fund,
mm-hmm.
and which have done pretty fair, I would say.
Well, the CGM, the fund has done very well. This is a fund. It's up 3.8% so far this year. That's better than the market. It has averaged 31.5% a year for the last 5 years, 20% a year for the last 10 years. So it's been a really, really good fund. What I would tell you, though, is that I think that the real estate market is slowing. And as a result, I think that most of the upside in that sector has already been squeezed out. Now, first of all, this is a sector fund, which means it invests just in one part of the economy, real estate. So whenever we have a sector fund, we never want to have more than 5% of our total portfolio in that fund, because this is not a core holding. It's sort of the icing on the cake. It's not the cake itself, it's the icing. The second thing is that if you've had this for some time and have big profits in it, I would probably be taking some profits and selling the fund and going back to like what your original investment was in the fund, and then taking those proceeds, those profits, and putting them into other funds like large cap funds, et cetera, or in other sectors that haven't had the kind of run-up that this one has.
Okay.
Horst, I very much appreciate your call. Thank you. All right, next up is Tara in Chicago. Tara, thanks for calling the Mutual Fund Show. How can I help you?
Yes, I'm a 23-year-old that's just starting out investing. I'm already investing in the Value and Restructuring Fund from Excelsior.
Uh-huh.
And I was also interested in the Dodge and Cox International,
uh-huh.
because I realized the importance of allocating and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And also any other funds you may be able to recommend, or any tips that you might have for someone.
Yeah, you know what? I would recommend, instead of the Dodge and Cox International Fund, I would recommend the SSGA International Stock Selection Fund, and the symbol for that fund is S as in Sam, A Alpha, I India, X X-ray, S-S-A-I-X. And I think what you'll find is that we can only look at the five-year track record of this fund because they got a new management team 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look, the performance has been as good or better than the Dodge and Cox Stock Fund. The difference is that Dodge and Cox Stock has just gotten so huge, mm-hmm. their international fund has gotten so big, that I think that it's going to be more and more difficult for the managers to deliver good results, whereas the SSGA fund is a relatively small fund at $2 billion. So I think they can be a little more flexible, and I think that that would be a better international fund for you. The other fund that I would urge you to take a look at is in the small cap growth side, and that is the FBR Small Cap Fund, symbol Frank Bravo Roger Victor X-ray, FBRVX. That fund's up 3.1% so far this year. It's averaged 20.18% a year for the last 5 years, 18.4% a year for the last 10. And I think that would be a nice complement to what you already have. So there's a couple additions. Tara, thank you so much for your call. I'm Anna Bold. We'll be right back. Let's now try Mo in Pittsburgh. Mo, you're on the Mutual Fund Show.
Hi, Adam. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
I appreciate the advice you gave me. I actually called a couple of months ago and had asked some questions back then, and your advice was very helpful.
Thank you.
I actually have another question, and I'm actually trying to narrow down my choices between what kind of sort of investment strategies I want to do. And I've met with Chris Nuttall a couple of times, and a very, very nice guy. I've also met with some other investors. And the one question that, you know, that sticks in my mind a lot is, you know, obviously keeping fees in mind and this big scare out there about how fees can kind of eat away at your, you know, retirement money over the years.
Yeah, that's only Vanguard talking.
Oh, really?
See, here's the thing about fees. The bottom line is that, you know, Vanguard, in all of their advertising, they say, you know, fees will eat away at your retirement dollars. Always go with a low-fee fund. Well, as far as I'm concerned, whether we're talking about an individual mutual fund or the service that we provide at the mutual fund store for our clients, our fees are expensive only if we do not provide value.
Right.
In other words, there are two ways that we provide value to you. The first is with performance. If we can give you higher returns net of our fee than what you could get on your own, then we have added value and have justified our fee. The second thing is the peace of mind that we provide of you being able to put your head on the pillow at night knowing that somebody that cares about your money as much as you do is watching over it and making decisions as necessary. That's worth something too. Okay. Now, no matter when you're comparing investment advisors, first of all, there's always somebody that'll do it for less.
Right.
If we say we're going to charge 1%, there'll be somebody, okay, I'll do it for 0.9. Okay, well, we'll do it for 0.9. All right, I'll do it for 0.8. There's always going to be somebody that does it cheaper, but cheaper is not necessarily better.
Right.
What counts is, and the number that we manage to at the mutual fund store, my company, and when we send out reports to our clients, the number is the number net of all fees. Because, really, I mean, if I made 90% returns every year and charged a 10% management fee, so you averaged 80%, would you be happy to pay 10%? Sure you would.
I wouldn't mind, sure. Yeah,
yeah, sure. Well, and while that is a ridiculous exaggeration, the point is that what you need to find is you need to find somebody, A, that you feel comfortable with and that you like talking with. Mm-hmm. B, you need to find somebody that you trust. And I think confidence is something you can have in a relatively short period of time. Trust is something that's built over extended periods of time.
Right.
And so that takes longer. So, you know, confidence first, and then, you know, so I always tell people, when, you know, if you're a new client, a year from now, if things work out the way I said they were, you'll have more trust in me than you do now. 5 years from now, if things worked out the way that I told you they would, then you'll have more trust in me than you do, you know, a year from now. And that's something that builds over a period of time. The confidence, I think, is something you can have pretty quickly.
Can I ask a specific question?
Yeah, and let me just make one more point, and then can you remember your specific question?
Sure.
Okay. The other thing that I think is really important, one of the things that I talk when I'm training our investment advisors for mutual fund stores across the country is setting expectations. And that when you go in and you're trying to hire an investment advisor, you need to find out in advance what you can expect. So I can tell you, when you're a client of the mutual fund store, you can expect that the advisor that you work with will make an outbound contact to you at least twice a year. It may be by email, it may be by telephone call, but at least twice a year they will contact you on, hey, I just want to let you know, I'm thinking about you, I've looked at your portfolio, I've made changes as necessary, is there anything that's going on in your life that I need to know about? You can expect that once a month you will get an email from me talking about our global strategy, the markets, and those kinds of things. You can expect that every quarter you will get a performance report that shows you how your accounts are doing relative to the market, and we give you both your rate of return in dollars and your rate of return in percentages and benchmarks so you can compare it. Okay, you can expect that you'll get a newsletter from us four times a year, including more commentary by me. You can expect that, you know, if you're older than 70 and a half, you can expect that we're going to remind you about taking your minimum required distribution. You can expect that we're going to give you a report at the end of the year that you give to your tax preparer that has everything you need to do your tax return. These are all the kinds of things that you can expect from us. And that's how you get that. So you need somebody you like, somebody you have confidence in, and then when they go through and they tell you this is what you can expect from me, that Oh, and one last thing, of course, we're going to make changes as necessary, and I'm never going to try and defend a bad decision. All right, so ask me your specific question.
You know there are many, but I'm going to try to narrow it down because I know you have a lot of callers on hold probably. The one thing my wife and I were talking about is we're, like, obviously, as you say, you know, the management fees are, you know, cheaper is not always better.
Right.
I agree with that, obviously. What I'm thinking about is, and she brought this up, is that eventually, you know, when we hit, say, $1 million mark or more,
right,
we might be paying a low average fee, obviously, for somebody to manage that because we need somebody's expertise.
Right.
But there are other particular management advisors who, you know, they start out maybe with a slightly higher fund chart or sales charges, but that actually diminishes down to zero after some time. After, unfortunately, it's after you hit about $1 million, so you're paying a lot of fees up to that point.
Yeah, but see, what happens is with those, what you're talking about there are what are called breakpoints with load funds. And so a fund will have a 5.75% load if you invest less than maybe 100,000. And then if you invest between 100 and 300,000, it goes down to 4.75% and so on. And when you get over $1 million, it goes down to zero. What happens, though, is that when you do that, the commission-based broker isn't getting paid up front the way he does when he gets the big load. And so the question is, what is his financial interest in watching over your account? See, the thing that I like about the way that we work with the fee basis is that now we do, our fees do go down. The more money you invest with us, you know, the rate that you pay
right.
goes down. And the reason we do that is that there are some economies of scale. There are certain costs with having an account with us. From our standpoint, there's an expense side that goes with having an account with a client. And that's the same whether the client has $1 million or has 50,000, which is our minimum account size. There are other expenses that are more for the bigger client because we spend more time talking with our bigger clients and a different level of service to those clients than we do otherwise. When you go to a commission-based broker and you meet that breakpoint, then with all those funds, they get paid up front. So what happens is even though you don't pay a commission, the mutual fund company will typically pay them like a 0.25% commission up front for bringing in that money, but then they don't get paid anymore. And so with the fee basis, you don't pay anything up front. You don't pay anything when you quit. There's no barriers to exit. So the only way that we can make more money is if your portfolio grows, and the only way we can make any money at all is if you stay with us. And because there are no barriers to exit, the pressure is on us every single day to make sure that we're getting you the best returns that we possibly can. With that commission-based broker, where all the commissions are waived and there's no additional management fee, he doesn't have a financial impetus to spend his day watching over his existing client accounts. Now, I'm not saying that these are bad guys. They're not. They would rather do well for their clients than do poorly.
Sure.
But the bottom line is that if they want to get paid, they got to go find somebody else that they can get to put in the funds and you know, get a commission from. So I will be the first one to admit I'm biased. I think that at my company, the Mutual Fund Store, we are the best at what we do. In fact, yesterday I'm happy to announce we hit a milestone, and that was we went over $3 billion in assets under management. I started this company in 1996 in the basement of a little office building in a suburb of Kansas City. It was me and my assistant, just the two of us in this little tiny basement office with nothing, no assets under management. We're now in 51 cities and $3 billion under management. I don't think we would have gotten to $3 billion and wouldn't be growing the way we are
right.
if we weren't doing a good job for our clients. So we don't sell you insurance. We don't do your taxes. We manage your investments. I think we do it very well. And what I can absolutely assure you is that the service that you get from us will be exceptional. We tell you what we're going to do, and then we do what we tell you. Mo, I very much appreciate your call, and I appreciate
Thank
your
you.
Time. Thank you. All right. Wow, that was a long call, and I apologize, but he had a lot of good questions. All right, now let's talk to Pat and Morris. Pat, you're on the Mutual Fund Show.
Hi. Thank you, Adam, for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an inherited IRA with sweep option, it's called, and I was wondering your opinion of the two funds that are in it.
Okay, now, here's one thing that I want you to be aware of. Whenever you inherit investments, that you need to consider those as if they were cash. because when you inherit something, just because the person who left it to you thought those were good investments, that doesn't mean, A, that they were, and B, it doesn't mean that they're appropriate for you in your particular place in life. So let's take a look at the two funds.
Okay, the first one is Dryden High Yield FD Incorporated Class A.
Okay, this is a high yield bond fund. The fund has done okay. The fund's up 2.5% so far this year. Over the last 5 years, the fund has returned 9.14% a year. That puts it about in the middle of the pack of high yield funds. So it's not a great fund. It's not a terrible fund. It's just a real okay fund. What is the other one?
The other one is the Jennison Blend Fund.
A. Okay, the Jennison Blend Fund is a large company blend fund, meaning that they own large, well-established companies. They own some growth style and some value style. And once again, this fund has been an okay fund. When you look at it, it's beaten the market for the 3 and 5 years. It's done worse than the market for the 1 and 10 years. It's just been a little more consistent. So what I would tell you is that you have two mediocre mutual funds. Now, one of my core investment philosophies is that if you're going to take the risk of the market, you owe it to yourself to be in the best funds possible. So I would tell you that right now, you're not in the best funds possible. Now, you're not in the worst funds. I get a lot of people that call the show and they own absolutely terrible funds. That's not the case here. But you're certainly not in the best funds. I think that you could definitely get an upgrade from here.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pat. Next up is David in Shelby Township. David, welcome
yes.
to the Mutual Fund Show. How can I help you?
Good afternoon. I would like to hear your comments on a variable annuity called Lifetime 5 from American Scandia.
Is this something you own already or something that somebody's trying to persuade you to buy?
Well, my financial advisor has asked me to consider this.
Yeah, no. Why don't you just go? You can just go ahead. Adam says no. What this is? Let me. And first of all, is this a taxable account or an IRA account?
This would be an IRA account.
Oh, okay. I don't even know where to start. First of all, let's start with I think that it's time to get a new investment advisor. I'll go with that too. What a variable annuity is a family of mutual funds that is issued by an insurance company. In this case, American Scandia, which is a division of the Prudential.
Yes.
Instead of directly by a mutual fund company. Now, what happens is when you buy a mutual fund, the way that the mutual fund company makes money is from ongoing management expenses. Typically, it's around 1%. So if the stocks they bought were up 15% in a year, they would say, okay, David, your account's up 14% this year. Okay? This American Scandia annuity has a bunch of mutual funds in it available from different fund companies, and that's how those mutual fund companies get paid. Well, how does American Scandia get paid? Well, what they do is they load on another layer of fees, which is somewhere between 1.5% and 3.5% a year, in addition to the fees charged by the mutual fund company. So if you own the same fund outside an annuity, you will do 1.5% to 3.5% a year better than owning that fund inside this annuity. Here's another thing I don't like. When you put this money into there, he told you if you take it out within the first, like, 7 years, you have to pay a penalty to get out, right?
I don't remember.
Yes, there is. And what happens is, what if you decide, what if none of the funds are good? What if you find out that, you're just not happy with this, you change your, I mean, let me ask you this. You remember that bear market thing we had between 2000 and 2002?
Oh, yes.
Okay, that was 7 years ago, started. Have your attitudes about investing changed over the last 7 years?
Somewhat.
Okay, well, what if they change over the next 7 years and you decide you want to do something different, and then you try and move your money and they go, oh, you have to pay a 5% penalty to get out. And you go, well, I guess I'll just keep it because I don't want to pay the penalty. The penalties end up making people keep things that they would otherwise sell, and I never want to own anything where my decision to keep it or sell it is based on anything other than the merits of whether the investment is continuing to meet my needs. If what you want is a high return for the broker, this is a great idea. If what you want are returns for yourself, you've got somebody here who cares more about how much money they make than they care about you. Please don't buy this annuity, and certainly don't buy it inside an IRA. That's a tax-deferred investment inside a tax-deferred investment. It doesn't make sense. I'm your host, Adam Bold, and we will be right back. All right, next up is Bill in Indianapolis. Bill, you're on the Mutual Fund Show.
Hey, Adam. I love your show.
Thank you.
I want to ask you a question of why I think, why is it that everybody is hoping for a first interest rate cut to spur the market?
Why is everybody waiting for an interest rate cut? Here's the thing. Right now, we have what many to consider, myself included, to be a Goldilocks economy. And in fact, I was with somebody yesterday, and they were saying, well, what's a Goldilocks? We were watching, I was watching CNBC, and they're like, what's a Goldilocks economy? Well, that's, you know, Goldilocks, it's, no, this is too hot, this is too cold, no, it's just right. Well, that's where the economy is growing, but it's not growing so fast that it causes a lot of inflation. And what the Federal Reserve does by raising or lowering interest rates is they can either stimulate or constrict the economy by using interest rates. So when interest rates go up, people tend to borrow less, which means they're not going to be able to, they're not going to buy houses the way they do. They're not going to charge things on their credit cards the way, because interest rates are higher. When interest rates go down, people tend to spend more, buy more, because the cost of funds is lower. So there are some people who are concerned that the Federal Reserve over in 2005 and 2006, when they were raising interest rates, that they raised interest rates too much. And as a result, it's going to slow the economy down, and that we haven't felt the effects of all those rate cuts yet. And so what will happen is that if the Fed does nothing, then the economy will slow down and people will start to lose jobs, and because people aren't buying as many things. And those, and so what the Federal Reserve will do is they will cut interest rates to try and get the economy going again. And so that's kind of the tightrope that the Federal Reserve walks, is trying to keep the economy growing, but not too fast.
Well, I understand that part of it, but I think that it would be a bad message if they send, they cut interest rates. It's a signal to the market, uh-oh, you know, we're slowing so much that we're in trouble, and maybe the market might take that negatively and start going down.
Well, you never know exactly. I mean, the Fed, when the Fed makes rate changes, you never exactly know what the response is going to be. Therefore, some period of time, I thought that the Federal Reserve would need to start making rate cuts as early as the first quarter of this year. If you'd asked me like a year ago, I would have said probably sometime next year we're probably going to have some rate cuts. But right now the economy's doing so well, it's not going to happen. That's been pushed off. I don't think we're going to see a rate cut or a rate increase, any change in the federal funds rate, at least until the third quarter of this year. And, you know, we'll just have to see. We, right now, this part of this Goldilocks thing is we're getting all this mixed economic data. One day we get a report that's a little bit better than expected. The next day we get a report that's a little bit worse than expected. And that's exactly what you can expect during a soft landing. And so I think that, you know, I think that the next move that the Fed makes probably will be a rate cut, not a rate hike. But I don't see it happening anytime soon, and I think that the stock market can continue to do well in this environment.
Oh, I would suggest that they leave it alone, and I think the market will do just fine, but I'm worried that they cut it like they did from 2000 to 2003. I mean, I'm not going to put you in the category of all these people that are wishing for a cut, but they got what they wanted. They cut the rates from 6% down to like 1% or 1.5%, whatever it got down to at the bottom. And stocks did nothing but go down for 3 years.
Yeah, but that was related to a lot of bubble in the stock market more than it was to interest rates. And had they not made those rate cuts during that period of time,
market would have gone down anyway.
It would have gone down more, and probably would still be down because the economy wouldn't have turned around. Okay. And you got to remember that also you had 9/11 during that, which, you know, the economy was just starting to do better, and then 9/11 came along, and that just, you know, put us back two more years.
Yeah,
Bill, I very much appreciate your call.
Thank you.
All right, next up is Art in Chicago. Art, you're on the Mutual Fund Show. How can I help you?
Adam, just an opinion that you've got on the three funds that I've got in my possession here. First,
okay, one at a time, please.
Yep. Dodge & Cox Balance, DODBX.
Yeah, the Dodge & Cox Balance Fund is a fund that owns a combination of both stocks and bonds. It's a very, very fine fund. Year-to-date, the fund's up 2.3%. That is better than the market as a whole. The fund has consistently been in the top 15% or better of all funds in the category. So while there's some other funds that if you came to me with new money, I might pay. This is a top-tier, absolutely wonderful fund.
Okay. Gabelli Equity Income, G-A-B-E-X.
Yeah, this is a large company value fund, and once again, there's some other funds that I like better. This one has been okay. Year to date, it's up 2.25%. That's better than the market. It's beaten the market for the 1, 3, 5, and 10-year time horizons. The 3-year numbers at 13.4% a year puts it in the 41st percentile. So, in other words, 40% of the managers have done better. Now, it's a longer term. The 5 and 10-year numbers are top decile, top 10% type returns.
Right.
But Mario Gabelli is a great fund manager. You know, I think that if you own it and you have gains built up in it, I'd hang on to that fund.
Okay. Third Avenue International Value, TAVIX.
Okay. The Third Avenue International Value is a small to mid-cap international fund. And what you'll see, the fund, this is not a very good fund. Now, the Third Avenue Value Fund, TAVFX, is a fund that we own for some of our clients at the Mutual Fund Store. But this fund has underperformed the EAFE index, which is the Europe, Asia, Far East index, for the year-to-date, the 1 year, the 3 year, the year-to-date, the 1 year, and the 3 year time period. It's done a little bit better over the 5 year, but over the last 3 years, it's in the 88th percentile. And there's 87% of the managers have done better. That's the one of the three that you should replace. I would look as a replacement at something either if you want something in the small cap international, the fund that I like is the Forward International Small Cap Fund, symbol PPAL, I India, S Sam, R Roger, X X-ray, PISRX. That fund, and just to give you an idea, over the last 5 years, ended yesterday, the Forward Fund has returned 24.5% a year, whereas the Third Avenue Fund has returned 18.9% a year over that same period.
Okay.
If you want something in the larger cap international, which would really be my preference for new money now, I would look at the SSGA International Stock Selection Fund, symbol SAM Alpha India X-ray, SSAIX.
Okay.
All right. I very much appreciate your call, Art. Thank you. Next up is Ted in Tampa, Florida. Ted, you're on the Mutual Fund Show.
Thanks, Adam, for taking my call.
Yes.
A couple of questions for you, specifically CGM Focus Fund.
Okay. The CGM Focus Fund is a large company blend fund, meaning they own large, well-established companies, combination of both the growth and the value styles. The funds this year, it's just on fire. It's up 10.29% so far this year. It has beaten the market for the year-to-date, the 1, 3, 5, and 10-year time horizon. So I think it's a perfectly fine fund. The thing that I don't they've been a little spotty in their returns from time to time, but I think it's a perfectly fine fund. If you own it, I'd hang on to it.
Thank you. If I could throw in one last question. I'm very interested in Asia, Pacific Asia region, without including Japan, and I've had a difficult time. The only fund family I seem to find focused in that respect would be the Matthews people.
Yeah, there's Matthews, but I'll tell you what, I would not be putting any money over there now. Look, there's no doubt that China and India are going to be powerful economic forces, but those markets have run up so much, I think that is already baked into the stock prices. Please buy a diversified international fund that will give you some China exposure. Don't buy a China fund right now. I'm Adam Bold. This is the Mutual Fund Show, and we'll be right back. All right, let's go back to the phones as soon as the music goes down. There we go. And let's talk with Barbara in Waterford, Wisconsin. Barbara, where's Waterford?
Waterford is in Racine County.
Oh, perfect.
Okay. I have a question about some 401k funds that I rolled over in March of 2006. It's a little over $147,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I was advised at the time to put them into a Guardian CXC variable annuity.
Oh, my goodness.
As of March of this year, I've got a little over $158,000 in the account. So I'm I just received a statement from them.
Yeah.
Telling me that I'm going to be at a 3.4 for this year. That's not the yield. I'm wondering if I would be wise to stay in that yet.
Well, here's the problem. First of all, here's what happened.
Okay.
You took money that was in a retirement plan at work.
Mm-hmm.
You rolled it, which is a tax-sheltered account, and you rolled it over into a tax-deferred investment. So you have a tax-deferred investment inside a tax-deferred account.
Okay.
Which means that the fees are 2 to 3 times higher than they should be if they had just got sold you a regular mutual funds instead of the annuity product. What's happened to you is, unfortunately, you met somebody who was much more interested in about in how much money they could make for themselves than they were in how much money they could make for you.
Okay.
And the problem is that this annuity has what are called surrender penalties.
Yes.
And if you wanted to take the money out and move it to regular mutual funds,
uh-huh.
you might have to pay a 6 or 7% penalty to get out.
Okay.
Okay, and so, you know, on $150,000, you're talking about a $10,000 penalty.
Okay, so I spent everything I made.
This is right, yeah. Exactly. This is one of the reasons that I don't like annuities. So now what happens is you say, just for the sake of discussion, let's say you decided that you wanted to move this to something else.
Mm-hmm.
You go, the fund's not doing as well as I thought it, as I think it should. I think I could get a better rate of return in something else. And I want an investment advisor who's just as interested in making money for me as their client as they are in making money for themselves. I want to move it. Mm-hmm. Then they say, well, yeah, okay, you can move it, but you have to pay a $10,000 penalty.
Okay.
And you go, well, then I guess I'll keep it because I don't want to pay the $10,000 penalty.
Mm-hmm.
So what ends up happening is because of these surrender penalties, you end up keeping something that you would otherwise sell just because you don't want to pay the huge penalty.
Sure.
And, you know, this greedy Gus probably got about a 7% commission when you bought this thing. So you put in roughly $150,000. So the person that sold you this thing got a $10,000 commission right up front. And if the investments do well or the investments do poorly, they don't care because they got 10 grand. So what I would tell you is that the process you have to go through now is you have to sit down with someone and evaluate the funds that are available inside that annuity and see if there are good investment choices. If there are, then you hang on to the annuity until the surrender penalties at least get a little less painful. Okay, because they go down every year, the
mm-hmm.
percentage. If, on the other hand, it turns out that all of the funds that are available inside there are not good,
mm-hmm.
then you have to bite the bullet and pay the penalty. And sometimes the first hit is the best.
Okay.
What do they say? The Rod Stewart's, the first cut is the deepest. You know, you just go ahead and take your hit now. And okay, I made a mistake, and you know. There's a lot of things I've done in my life that if I had to do them over again, I'd do it differently.
Okay.
But you learn from those things, and sometimes, you know, you have to pay a little price for the mistakes that we make.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to have somebody go through with you, somebody that's going to take the time. And the other thing is this person got a $10,000. Have they changed the mix inside the annuity since you bought it?
Not to my knowledge. In fact,
yeah.
I just had a call from them the other day that – you know, they wanted me to come in because I have some other funds through them, too, through American funds. And I should, you know, come in, and they wanted to go over everything with me. So that's why I thought, well, I'm going to call you first.
I think you need to start hunting for a new investment advisor, somebody that is more interest, because these people have got you in a bunch of products where they're making a lot of money. And over the last year, we've probably made 3 or 4, at least 5 changes to our client accounts. I mean,
mm-hmm.
depending on the, I mean, they have to be making changes from time to time because the market's changed from time
sure.
to time.
Mm-hmm.
I very much appreciate your call. Thank you, Barbara.
I thank you for your help.
All right, bye-bye. All right, that brings us to the end of this week's show. As always, thanks for spending part of your Saturday. I'm Adam Bold. This has been the Mutual Fund Show. See you next week.
The Mutual Fund Show is produced by the Mutual Fund Research Center, LLC, and sponsored by its independently owned and operated franchises and affiliated stores throughout the United States, including your local store. The Mutual Fund stores provide investment advisory services to their clients using Mutual Fund research and analysis performed by the Mutual Fund Store Research Center under the direction of Adam Bold. Bold. Investment advice provided to each mutual fund store serves the needs of each individual client and may or may not include funds mentioned in today's broadcast. Listeners should not consider today's discussion as a recommendation of any fund and should carefully evaluate any investment before investing. Individuals who invest with their local mutual fund store will incur management fees but not loads in addition to the management fees and other expenses charged by the mutual fund companies. We have discussed no-load mutual funds during this broadcast. The Research Center's recommendations may include load-waived funds that are only available through certain platforms. Mutual funds, like other investments, have a risk of loss. Please visit www.mutualfundstore.com for additional information.